Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Contracts are starting to pour in now. A couple of big ones. So, of course, Kirill Kaprizov. Welcome to 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. And now Luke Hughes has signed, and we've got one RFA out there. Let's get into Kelly Chase.
By the way, one way to miss camp, right?
Yeah.
sign in the last week.
Not a terrible strategy. Kelly Chase is going to join us in just a little bit, and we'll have some laughs there and also update on his health and his progress. Last we heard, he was doing better, so we'll get the latest on that. But on Kirill Kaprizov, $17 million for an AAV. There was different reactions to it, as you and I would check out with people. Crazy day in the hockey world. This changes the landscape of the hockey world. There were some pretty strong reactions to my quest for reaction yesterday.
Well, this is one of those things where you look at it and say, I mean, he basically held out another couple of weeks for $1 million a year, because the rumored original contract was for $16 million for eight. At the same time, from a pragmatic point of view, I can see that there would be owners around the league going, somebody gave a guy $17 million. So there's pressure on that side. And the other thing is, how many are the highest paid players in the league that, quite frankly, aren't centermen? He's not a centerman. He's a winger. You don't pay wingers near the money you pay centers. Am I correct on that?
Yeah.
When you think about what their role is on a club, wingers rarely, now there are always exceptions. Ovechkin was an exception for a while, but rarely are the highest paid guys on teams. It's centermen that are really the drivers of a team. So that to me is fascinating. The other one is, From a Wild perspective, if they wanted to pay the $17 million, fine. But I think that's how the term got to eight years. If you're going to pay the guy that amount of money, you better get him for as long as you can. Correct?
I don't think the Wild had any choice here. You can't walk away from Kirill Kaprizov. He's the most dynamic player in your franchise's history. If you don't pay him, and what the owner said in Craig Leopold and opening up the option to be the highest paid player in a record-setting contract. Like Billy Guerin was in
a no-choice
situation with this. You either become a part of the sizzle of the National Hockey League or you do a rebuild. And they're not ready to do that. They don't want to be doing that.
Well, and
they can't do that.
No, and let's face it. Whether it was true or not, there was a real belief that the Wild had a ton of cap space. And so that they did have room to push the envelope with a big contract. You know, they were out from the shadow of the Suter and Parise contracts so that they could be a little more liberal with this deal. But I did have a couple of guys text me and actually say, I know it was a different manager. It was Chuck Fletcher versus Billy Guerin, but it was the same owner. And the question was, didn't they learn a lesson with the Suter contract and the Parise contract?
Yeah, I get that. But again, what's the state of the franchise if Kaprizov plays this out?
Well, I mean, listen, in the short term, you're right. But you're paying, you know, you're paying on an 8-year contract for potential. He's been great for them. No question. When he's healthy, he's been great. But on the other hand, the pragmatic side says, what have we done with him in the lineup? Where are we with him in the lineup? How many playoff rounds have we played with him in the lineup? And that's a challenge. That's a real challenge. There, emotionally, you are correct. They had no choice. The fan base knew that they had no choice. Kaprizov knew they had no choice. I mean, Craig Leopold basically said, yeah, we understand. We understand that. But the hardcore business side says, we are still taking a risk. If they go, they may not make the playoffs this year.
I'll put it another way. They get the star player.
Yes.
But are they further from winning a championship because of taking up almost 17% of the cap?
I'm going to put my other hat on here because, you know, I mean, I'm going to put my union hat on and say it's not up to Kirill Kaprizov to manage the cap for the Minnesota Wild. It's not. That's Bill Guerin's job. You're ducking the question.
Do you think that they're further or closer to winning a championship with Kirill Kaprizov at that number?
Well, in the short term, I think they're probably – you know what? I don't know. I don't know. Because our game is different than football. Our game is different than basketball. You know, Kirill Kaprizov will play, on average, 21 minutes a night. 21 minutes a night. So the other 39 minutes, he's going to be sitting on the bench. And his teammates are going to be responsible for the success of the team for that period of time. And so it's the ultimate team sport, and that's why the challenge of this kind of contract. By the way, I think it's the same discussion that's going on in Edmonton somehow, some way. You know, are we – and Connor's publicly asking the right question. You know, are we going to be able to win with me making 20% or 19%? Are we going to be able to win in Edmonton? That's what Connor's asking. So that's a real challenge at this point.
It's gone so far so fast.
Yes.
Mikko Rantanen and Mitch Marner, high-profile players that were available. They signed for 12, John. Boy, This is $5 million more than very recent best players available. And numbers between Marner and Kaprizov, are you saying there's $5 million difference there? Or well, Rantanen, $5 million difference there?
The problem becomes is hockey players, as a norm, are very conservative. You know, right. They're very conservative. Their attitude is, I want job security. I want my family to be in a safe place. I want my kids to grow up in one city. Not everybody thinks that way, but a lot of hockey players have done that for years and years and years. And that's why there's no good answer to this. I mean, the Minnesota Wild, in my opinion, are paying on potential.
No, they receive value for him. And they hope he can be great. He'll never be Connor McDavid. It's just not going to happen. But the idea of where this contract is for a $17 million AAV compared to the 12s that I just mentioned,
sure,
makes this contract an outlier.
What does this?
This is not comparable. Kyle Connor, Jack Eichel, they can't be. You can't look at this and go, I'm going to get $17 million. It's extreme.
Well, I think the Eichel story is the Eichel question is probably the most fair one. Again, I mean. I think Eichel as a centerman is more value than any winger. Does this change Eichel's position on his deal? I don't expect him to answer.
It bumps up the salary, I would think. Which
is why those 32 owners are looking at each other saying, "What have we done here? what's going on? How are we going to do this?" I'm sure that there are a few owners not very happy with Craig Leupold today.
But I honestly don't think that it's a comparable for the other guys. It's so extreme. You go, and managers can go, but sorry, that doesn't work as a comparable. What does Connor do now?
I don't think, I think Connor could have told them exactly what he wanted for the term that he wanted, and they would have had to sign it. Period. That's why this negotiation in Edmonton is different. Because it's not, in the end, it's not about money or term in Edmonton. It's about, are we in a position to win for the next 5 years?
Kyle Connor's numbers? Very similar to Kaprizov. Does he ask for $17 million?
I would argue that Kyle Connor's numbers are very similar to Mitch Marner's too, and so I like 12.
So does anybody go in there and go, I'm worth 16.5, $17 million? Not a chance.
No, I don't think so either. The answer is, I don't think it has near the influence on a whole for most
because people. Because it went too far.
But there will always be an outlier. There will always, you know, and the other thing is, Kaprizov had options and will always have options. Always have options. And you know that.
Yeah.
He could go home and pay and play. He can go home and play in the KHL for big money too. So that's why it's different for Russian players, I think, than for others. I really do. I think little bit of leverage at the end of next year, had he not signed, he could stay in North America or he could go home. And I think that that always plays a bit of the game in a general manager or an owner's mind.
Is Kirill Kaprizov the highest paid player in the National Hockey League next year?
No, Connor will be. Connor will be.
Because Connor has a choice. He can go, I'll take less for the team and try and win.
But here's the thing. Again, then the question becomes on Connor's situation. Take the 3-year deal.
Yeah.
At less money. And then, by the way, in 4 years, when the cap is $125 million.
You can still hit your home run.
You can still hit your home run, you know. Hey, and by the way, with the Luke Hughes deal.
Yeah, Luke Hughes 7-for-9. And now Jack Hughes is the lowest paid Hughes brother.
For now.
For 4 years.
For at least 4 more years. That's right. And it's amazing. Amazing the amount of money that's going through. And yeah, so $9 million for Luke. Jack's at what, 8? Quinn's at 9.925. So
yeah.
I want to get to a birthday party with the Hughes boys.
Wow. they got it done though.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, and Tommy knew he was gonna get it done. So Tommy knew he was gonna be, you know, it was just a matter of time and trying to figure it out and getting some money again. And would the negotiation be Tommy to Pat Brisson, the agent, or Tommy with the ownership group?
Yeah, probably a little bit of both.
I wonder.
How fast do you think the rest of the guys, big four, now three, sign up?
I don't think there's any hurry.
You don't think this, okay, we've got a number out there, let's go. I think it's pretty quick. I think the reaction is pretty quick.
You do, huh? I'm in no hurry. I mean, I had suggested that Eichel and Connor were going to sign first, just because I think the environments they play in and the relationship they have with the club are so positive that it's just, you know, we're in no hurry. We'll get it done. We'll get it done properly. And then everybody can rest easy. And I do think that in both situations, all those people in those two negotiations are all on the same page.
You know, 5 straight years, we had the same player as the highest paid guy in the National Hockey League, Connor McDavid, 5 straight years. And then Nathan MacKinnon went $100,000 more. Again, and Austin Matthews went a little bit more. And Leon Draisaitl went a couple million dollars more. And now it's just, I don't know whether it's a good thing for the game. I honestly don't.
Well, but listen, this is what has been negotiated between the players and the owners. This is what a collective bargaining agreement allows them to do. You know, these contracts, by the way, and they're small compared to the other 4 sports in North America.
You got that right.
They're small. You know, this is a sign that the business of hockey is good. That's what they're a sign of. You know, there's more money coming in. There's a new TV deal in Canada coming in. There'll be a new TV deal in the United States coming in 3 years. Business is good in the National Hockey League.
Okay, let's go back to the regular season and leading up to the trade deadline. Does Colorado now go, why didn't we just pay Rantanen that money? Because that looks like a great deal now.
Except the domino effect of all this stuff. The guy that is probably smiling more than anybody else, I think at this point, is Cale Makar. Because Cale Makar's contract, he's in the same boat as Quinn Hughes, right? I think Quinn Hughes is smiling too. So that becomes the challenge, is because as soon as you finish, for a lot of teams, as soon as you finish signing one deal, you have to find a way to pay the other guy. And I do think that in Colorado, I'm not sure they felt they could pay Rantanen long-term and Makar long-term because they've already paid MacKinnon long-term.
I don't think the Kirill Kaprizov contract can stand up as a comparable for the other guys. That's my opinion. We'll see where everybody else falls in. And I think Kaprizov's the highest paid guy next year because it's gone so far.
Well, there's always an outlier, isn't there?
You bet. We'll get to Kelly Chase, who's just signed on. He's got a whole bunch of projects going, along with the big project with his health and the battle with cancer. Going to be fun. It'll be interesting. And I'm going to tell you right now, there might be the odd swear word come out.
I was going to say something there, but that's just not me.
Yeah, don't swear just to swear. Is that what you were going to do?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm very mature. So.
You are. Yeah, the most mature person on this podcast, I can tell you that. Wow. We'll be back.
Particularly after the break.
With Lard and Shannon. Lard and Shannon, it's 100% Hockey. We continue with, here's Kelly Chase from St. Louis. So what's happening in your world right now?
Well, I got a lot going on. I'm actually starting a podcast with Hull.
Oh, my God. Seriously?
Yep. You guys wouldn't turn them loose on the air, so I'm going to turn them loose.
Oh, no. We just can't. We can never find Brett. That's our problem. I'm surprised you could find him.
Yeah. You don't have a play. Guys searching Cabo? That's where you go. He's pretty elusive. For a big
When's that come out? When do you guys start that project?
We're going to start this Saturday. We're actually going to do more of a Manning and Manning show, so we're going to have our podcast thing that we'll do podcasts, but when the game's on, we'll just sit on the couch and talk to our guests. And basically I'm in the studio right now.
Yeah.
Figure out how to do this, which I can't, but I'll just give this a quick spin here. This is kind of like the studio, and you've got a couple chairs. And that big glass window back there, that's a garage. It's just in a warehouse. And what'll happen is we'll have watch parties going on while the show's going on.
And this is for Blues games?
Blues games, yes. And the podcast will be kind of on our own. And then I bought a Lamborghini that I got wrapped with all uh, with all blues unsung heroes and fights, and it's called The Ice Guardian. And we're going to give it to Children's Hospital. We're going to raffle it off and give it to Children's Hospital with Siteman's Cancer Institute. So we'll raffle off the Lamborghini. I'm not really Lamborghini guys, you know, John. I'm more of a half-ton truck. Like,
I was going to say an F-150, man.
F-150, yeah. Yeah, more of a Chevy guy, but yeah.
Okay.
And then we'll have our watch parties and everything. We'll do 20 more of the Manning and Manning show is right. What it'll be. So the game will be going on. We'll be talking to our guest, you know, whether it's a hockey player or John Elway or, you know, Holly and Kid Rock. You never know with him, right? You know, and we'll just watch the game. And then when we have a replay, we'll get the amount of time we're allowed on it with the replay. We'll talk about it. We'll go back to the stories.
Wow.
This setup that you had there. Yeah, something cool. Jumped out at me. Hold on. There, is that a massage chair?
Two of them.
Do you have two massage chairs for your watch party?
Yes, sir.
That's great.
And that really subtle Stanley Cup just in front of the coffee table was nice too.
Yeah, well, that old thing, those guys in 19 were gracious to win in the city, and it was pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, before we get any farther, how's your health?
Well, I had a little setback yesterday. I've got leukemia's back, and I've been doing radiation and chemo. I have one more round of chemo today. But I've lost about 65% of my 70% of my eyesight in my right eye. And apparently it's not going to come back. The leukemia sat on the optic nerve too long and it took my sight, but, I have a bone marrow biopsy today. So they go in and drill in your back and go down to your hip and take some bone marrow. And then they'll do 5 spinal taps. They'll take fluid out of my spine. And once they get the vial of that, they'll take and shoot chemo down the hole. And so I have one more treatment of that. So the leukemia actually showed up again, John, on my brain fluid, not on my tissue, but it's on my brain fluid. So, I did 14 days of radiation, 3 chemo treatments. This will be my 4th. And hopefully that does the trick because it's not really in my tissue anymore. It's snuck by my spinal, through my neck in into the fluid on my brain, sat on my optic nerve and it took my sight. But hey, listen, the good news is it wasn't on the tissue and, you know, just got to keep fighting. The only thing I've really been good at, so I might as well just keep at it. So I'll be all right.
So I'm curious. You have lived this life for a while now.
Yeah.
How, I mean, are you tired most days? How do you feel it on a day-to-day basis other than a doctor looking at a chart, a doctor measuring something? How do you feel it?
Yeah, it's tiring. You know, like I lost 107 pounds. I was 141 pounds. I was too heavy when I, you know, some people go with Ozempic. I went with chemo. But honestly,
well, only you can joke about something like that, Kelly.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You got to kind of joke about it, but you also got to just, I've said this before, John. I mean, I was always a guy that was running at the fight, right? When people were running away from it, I was running at it. It pisses me off now that I can't run at it. And so I got to get myself, I'm 175 pounds now. I got to get myself up to strength-wise, probably about 190, 195, just because of the structure in my body needs the support of muscle. Mm-hmm. I've got a torn patellar tendon in my right knee. I've got 2 herniated discs in my lower back and 2 in my neck. My shoulder is buggered up and I probably need a right hip. So in order for me not to have that all happen, I need to get muscle around it to support it. And the hardest part has been losing it in my neck and back because when I lost my muscle and my fat, my skeleton kind of collapsed. And then what causes the neuropathy in your legs so you can't feel it in that is when them bones shift and they get across your nerves. And I've had that in both legs now. So the right leg, I can't feel anything down to my ankle. So I need to get that structure back. And that's just been the grind. But again, you know what? It nothing comes easy. And if you're going to piss and moan about it, you might as well. You've quit. So there's no use. So just keep going and keep, you know, on with your life and know that you got a challenge. And, you know, and you have days that are tough. But you have to have those days when you're by yourself. You can't have it around your family and that, because negative energies. I'm very grateful that I have the friends I have and the support I have. And I see people dying around me on those floors, and it's no fun.
Yeah. By the way, what did you play at?
I probably played it around 190.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, right around there was a good weight for me. I think the last year I played at about 196, but I didn't play many games that year. I was injured, and I probably should have been lighter than heavier. But, you know, 190 was a good number for me.
You talk about, and you're very public about your battle, and you reference the mental strategy. Where are you, and what's your reaction to the latest news?
Well, you know, I haven't even shared it with all my brother and I shared it with my sister, my brother and my mom yet, to be honest with you. I don't know. I think I'm at that hospital so much, and there's so many ebbs and flows. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those things where I don't know. I mean, was I bummed out? It was a tough night, but at the end of the day, you know, you got to figure out, well, how's the other eye going to react, which is real positive. And then, do I need to have all my vision in this? And to start hearing about people that have had the struggles, right? And had to go through it. And, you know, I can go in that hospital and I could see 20 people that are far worse off than me. And it seemed like once a week, and I was in there for a long, long time, right? I had delirium for 16 days, was unconscious for 3, and needed to be paddled and revived. So if I start looking at it that way, or instead of just saying, okay, I'm going to be on this side, I'm not going to get married to my bed. I took a Peloton in there and I worked out every day, and I'm going to be positive. You start getting a collection of people walking with you in the hallways all day. And hey, Chase, how's it going? You know, like, because you need that. And a lot of people, they could lay there all day because they don't have anyone. I have all these, you know, guys dropping in, talk, Chief, mm-hmm. Neely, Osh. Like, I'm just telling you, Kirky Muller, like guys I never played with, Jimmy McKenzie. I woke up one morning and Stu Grimson and I fought like 11 times. I'm laying in bed and it's got to be 5:30 in the morning, and I kind of like look at the clock and I feel something move beside me. And I look and it's Grimson. I said, oh, Jesus, I must be sick if you're here.
That'd be a nightmare to see Grimson turn in your bed.
Well, I said to him, I said, you're 0-11. You might as well do it now. It's your best chance. So he started laughing. He said, Chase, I'm going to kiss you right on the lips right now, and there's nothing you can do about it. And he was right. I was like 150 pounds. And anyway, but Grimmer's there, you know, Jimmy Mack checking in, and Twister's almost lived at the hospital with me. I have a great Twist story. Well, I have two, but the first one was when I just got asked to, you know, Darren just asked me about my state of mind. I had a moment where I had like literally an issue, like they call it chemo brain, but I'd been in that hospital. I got shitty news again. I'm in the shower. It's 11 at night. I call Twister. I said, get me out of here. He's like, what? He goes, what are you doing? And what's the matter? I said, I can't take it. If you don't get me out of here, I'm leaving one way or the other. He's like, he doesn't say, no, listen, let me talk. You know, he goes, let me ask you a question. I go, what? He goes, you hooked up to anything right now? And I go, nope. He goes, I'll be there in 20 minutes. So it's like the movie, The Town, you know, Ben Affleck says, you know, hey, listen, I'm going to ask you to do something. We can never talk about it again. We're going to hurt some people. You know, and Reiner goes, whose car are we taking? That's kind of what it was like, right? Twister. Yeah. But here's a funny story. He's such a brilliant guy, okay? And he was two-time Scholastic Player of the Year when we were junior. And Twister, I always say this about Twister. He's smart enough to run a bank. He'd just rather rob it. So, you know, so it was one of those things where you're kind of laughing, but it's so true. He's brilliant. And he was always at the hospital. And one day he was working on the other side of where his home is. His home's 40 minutes west. And he was working in East St. Louis in Collinsville. Anyways, he shows up in my room. It's 10 o'clock at night. I got two fellowship doctors in there talking to me. And Twister comes in and he's got a big bag with Target clothes. And he walks in, he goes, "Hey guys, how's it going?" And he goes over to the couch beside my bed and he pulls it out to make it into a bed. And he dumps the clothes out and he starts undressing. And he goes, "Do you guys, don't mind me." And I'm kind of chuckling, right? Gets down to his underwear, goes into my shower, walks in my bathroom, goes in my shower, he's showered, comes out, he's got two towels wrapped around him. And he says, "Hey guys, if you guys are thinking of sanding your deck, you should use these towels in here." He goes, "They're terrible." And these guys are going, "Who the hell is this guy?" Right? And so he's asking him all these questions as he's getting dressed. And he's putting on a pair of like sweatpants and a shirt. And he's laughing, you know, he's just asking all these questions. And they're, you know, "What's his plasma level at? What's his white blood cell count? You know, do you have derivatives that haul away the cancer cells once, or the leukemia cells once, you know, this trial drug kills them?" Because, you know, he kills them, and they're telling him, you know, "How does the body expire it?" And these guys are just blown away with these questions. I can tell, right? And then he goes back in the bathroom, and the guy, and the one doctor looks at me and goes, "Who is this? Is this another doctor?" I said, "No, he's certainly not a doctor. He stayed at Holiday Inn Express last night, but he's not a doctor." And the guys just, they're just more, I go, "That's Tony Twist." The doctor goes, "No way." And I go, "Yeah." He goes, "Now, am I allowed to say any curse words on your show?"
"Oh, sure."
"Okay." Well, he goes, "That's not the fucking way I thought I was going to meet Tony Twist." Twister comes out of the bathroom, makes his bed, sits down on the edge of the bed, talks to the doctors. They're mesmerized. They got to get a picture with him. So that we, the four of us get a picture, they call a nurse in. The doc would come in every week and he would say, "I can't believe that was Tony Twist. I cannot believe that was Tony Twist." And he just kept howling. He goes, "Does he sleep here often?" I go, "Yeah, you know, once a week for sure." And he just made his bed and crawled into bed like nothing was going, like he was at the Holiday Inn, and he was going to bed because the next morning he could go to work, save at least 45 minutes on a drive. And these doctors just—they didn't know what to say. They were just dumb.
Was he your roommate when you played? No,
Holly.
Oh, Holly. Okay. Well, that explains.
You got another hour.
Yeah. What was your second Twister story?
Well, my second Twister story is I had a little incident with some construction guys that were building a place for us, and the guy was pretty animated about talking on the phone, and I was in the hospital and I'm pretty sure he didn't think I was getting out. And finally, I just said, "I'm getting out of here in a few days and I'm coming to see you." And my kid's listening to this and he tells Twister, "Hey, my dad's, he's going off the reservation here. He's losing it. He's going out to get into it with this guy." Now, the St. Louis Police Department issued me a billy club a long time ago, which I keep in my car. And so I went out to the construction site and tapped a guy on the top of his hard hat with this thing and said, "From now on, every action's got a reaction. I want you all to understand it." And they were messing with some guys that weren't union guys. So they were messing around with them. And Twister shows up, takes the loader, jumps in their loader, runs at a load of gravel, moves the gravel so these guys can pull their landscaping trucks in, non-union guys. And then he sits on the end gate of the truck and he just kind of leans back and he's going, "Chaser, I think we're going to order DoorDash today and watch how things can follow out today. I think we're just going to sit here and watch." And these guys are terrified of him, you know? And so we failed the inspection on the elevator one day. And I, Twister happened to be out there, and this kid's down in the elevator. He goes, is Chase here? And the guy goes, yeah, I think I saw him here. He goes, Jesus, we got to get this thing fixed, because if he phones Twist again, we don't need that lunatic out here. I couldn't stop laughing. I was like, Twister was laughing. I was laughing. But when you need him, he is a 3 a.m. guy. So he showed up, and I said to my kid, how many times do you think you get to call him? Twist. He goes, Mr. Twist said I can call as many times as I want.
Well, there you go.
Muscle. Let's take a break. We'll come back with more stories, laughs, and a little bit of hockey in there. It's 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. What do you think of your Blues this year?
I know the record isn't great in exhibition, but I really like the team. I really like them. I think they've done a hell of a job with young players. We probably have four guys that are ready to play that won't start in St. Louis. And that's a good thing. That's a good problem to have. I'm excited about Alex Steen taking over as well, because Army does such a great job. But Alex is working so hard the last couple of years, and he's going to be great. Our D are bigger and they're more mobile.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't win without, you know, my buddy Sean Payton says, listen, if you get little guys that don't have that oomph, he goes, listen, if they don't bite when they're puppies, they're not going to bite when they're dogs. And you need big guys. You know, you can't win with shrubs. You need trees. And so,
listen, I know they lost that series to Winnipeg, but they opened a ton of eyes, Kelly.
Oh, sure they did. I mean, look, it was a sad thing to see that they didn't go on to the next round for experience. But, you know, when they won the cup, they bullied everyone out of the playoffs, you know. And I know that, you know, we all know the bureaucratic bullshit that's gone on the last few years and how the world has changed. And it's starting, pendulum swinging back. Tough guys matter now again. Mm-hmm. Big guys matter again, you know, and they're a commodity. I mean, shit, Ryan Reeves is playing at 38. You know, his skates come with him, two boxes. You know, the feet are so damn big and clumsy, but I got to give him credit. He's tougher than hell, and teams still want him, you know. So my whole point is we didn't bully Dallas. We bullied Winnipeg out of the series. Dallas played us to 7. We went in overtime. We absolutely abused San Jose. They couldn't have played a game 7. And then to win 3 times in Boston, like, you got to have some stones to win in there and push guys around. And they did. And so I think we're headed more that direction with a balance of players that are steady and play like Steiner played, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is, and you've had a front row seat to it, is Jordan Binnington's finally getting some respect.
He's good. He's so good. And, you know, and Hoffer, that's the best tandem in the league. There's no tandem better than those two. I don't care what you tell me. I mean, Hoffer's good too. And Binner's just like, and he's such a solid guy. Like, he just, and people think it's cocky, but it's not. It's just honesty. And man, we need more of that in our lives. And he's been great, you know, like, he called me the other day and he said, listen, I'm sure you got all kinds of doctors and everybody, but this guy just called me and he went through this or talked to me. And I don't know why I kept in touch with him, but he had a stage 4 cancer guy. And he gave me all this information. He said, you do what you want with it. But I just had to tell you, because it's like God speaking to me about knowing that you got this on your brain and on your eye. And he goes, I just had to tell you. Like, this kid is just a solid. I said, you're not offending me by calling. Call me anytime.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a great human being, but now he's, like you said, he's getting some respect, because I think Johnny's, he's very comfortable in those situations.
He's dialed back the extracurriculars.
Yeah.
He doesn't do it anymore.
I'm surprised at that, because I thought some of that fueled him, but I think it's made him a better goaltender stepping back.
Yeah. Yeah.
I liked it. Just for the record, I enjoyed the extracurricular.
Yeah, well, me too. The reason I did was because I honestly, it was a way of showing that he outwardly cared too. You know, he was, you know, it's funny because he reminds me with that intensity of a guy that you guys probably, you know, of course, but you don't know that he was like this, was Pat Jablonski.
Right.
Oh yeah. Pat Jabber would drop his gloves in the crease and fight with a guy. If the guy was abusing one of our defensemen, we had a couple soft guys in Peoria. Jabber would drop the gloves and fight the guy.
And really? I didn't know that.
Oh yeah. And so he had this, you know, I want to win. Well, we won the cup down there. Guy, Bear, and him were the goalies. And Guy was starting, and Jabber was actually got called up, and Jablonski, myself, and Dave Tomlinson got sent to the minors. And he actually, he came down, and Bobby Plager said, you know, I'm thinking of starting Jabber. And we're Dave was the captain. I was assistant captain before we got called up, and we're like, okay. And Bobby goes, what do you think? And we're like, well, it's a no-brainer. Like, who competes more than him? We're going to win, Bobby. We were down in the series in the semifinals. We go, we're going to win. Put him in the net. Sure enough, we win. Then we win the next three straight in the finals. And then he loses a 3-2 game in Peoria. Bruce Boudreau actually scored all three goals. Should I make a change? And we're like, Bobby, are you nuts? Like, this guy's got stones like you read about. Like, no. And, of course, he played all the games when he came down.
I got a few questions. First of all, how much did Chelios pay you to wear that T-shirt?
I put it on. I love this. First of all, I hated him. I hated playing against him. I couldn't stand his swagger off the ice. If I could have punched him in the mouth after a game, I would have. And I've been just through Holly and Gretz and guys, I become friends with Shelly. And then we've done some charity work together. And I'm maybe one of the most giving people I've ever been around. And what he does for the city of Chicago and for kids, we just had his tournament. It's mind-boggling. The money, oh my gosh. It's the stuff that he does for that city. It's crazy. And we were just there the day before the tournament. We showed up. We're going to go to the Bears game, and we're going to meet on his boat. And he's got his shirt off. I said, Chelios, put your shirt on. I'm not getting on that. I'm not getting on the boat. He looks like he's 22, just ripped and tanned. I'm like, you know, he's Greek, a Greek god. He is. I'm like, put your shirt on. You're embarrassing everyone else. But I love Chelly. And I love the things that he does. I know he had his squabbles with the league, and he can be a bit, I'll call it spicy once in a while. But at the end of the day, boy, what a competitor and what a gentleman when it comes to helping kids.
The other thing is, the preseason golf tournament the Blues have, they have now named the winning foursome the Chelly Case Community Cup. And you didn't know about that, did you?
No, I didn't.
What'd that mean?
Well, it was emotional, of course. But the crazy thing about it is that I just told the story about this kid that, you know, was so honest with me, this Don Ringling. I got the shit kicked out of me the night before one of our skates with these kids. And he come up to me, you know, they're brutally honest. And he goes, hey, Chase, I saw you last night. Not very good. I got a black eye, and I'm like, well, thanks, Donald. You know, like, and I'm telling the story on stage, and lo and behold, who walks out of the shadows to present the award? But Donald Ringling, who I haven't seen in 20 years.
Wow.
So it was pretty cool. And the fact is, John, I get a lot of credit for a lot of these things. And I'm pretty grateful that I have the people around me in that. But there's so many people that do so many things, right? And I get to stand up and accept awards, just like the King Clancy. Mm. The King Clancy was because of those kids, right?
Right.
And so, like, when the league called me, I thought I was getting fined for some night acting up in the playoffs. So I wouldn't take the call. And remember Mary Pat Clark from the NHL?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Mary Pat called the third time because I wouldn't take calls from these guys calling. I was on the tractor and putting sod in this big yard we had at the lake. And my wife comes on. She goes, "Get in here. Mary Pat Clark's calling you. You get in here and take this call. I'm tired of telling them you're busy." So I go in and find out they want me to go to Toronto. I won the King Clancy. So when I got up to accept the award, I said, "Well," I said, "I got to be honest with you." I said, "Normally when the league's calling, it's Berkey calling me. And I can tell you the acceptance speech is a lot different." And so, you know, I was up there accepting an award that a whole bunch of people needed to be included in. And the same thing goes with this award.
Yeah.
I'm very grateful, but there's a lot of people that have helped do a lot of things with me.
You know, and the fascination for me is I've been going to St. Louis since the 70s.
Right.
I started, you know, and Dan Kelly was in many ways one of my mentors, and ended up being one of my best friends. And there, and Susie Matthew ended up being one of my best friends.
The best.
The best. There is something magical about St. Louis.
Yeah.
There's something magical about being an athlete, no matter what sport, in St. Louis. I mean, we have friends now that have been out of St. Louis for years, and now they're retiring. They're moving back.
Yep.
Like JD's moved back. Joe Micheletti's moving back.
Yeah.
What is it about St. Louis that makes it such a great place? And in many ways, it's the hockey capital of America. People in Minnesota and Massachusetts don't want to hear that. But St. Louis has become such a great place to live. Why is that?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. One, it's, you know, they say there's 7 degrees of separation in life. And you know, you're 7 degrees away from knowing Gandhi. Okay, somebody knows somebody that knows somebody, right? In St. Louis, there's one. Everyone's got a guy. You need a plumber? I got a guy. You need an electrician? I got a guy. Car salesman? I got a guy. I need tickets to this? I got a guy. Everyone's got a guy. So that quality of life, you can pull up to the stadium, sidewalk, 4 feet from the door, throw the police the keys and go to the ballgame. Park in front for the concert. Like, who has a better quality of life than a fourth line slug that wasn't very good? And all of a sudden, you know, I get treated like gold here. And I don't take it for granted either. I'm grateful for it. I can't believe how well I'm treated in the city. That's one of the reasons. Our alumni is special. Okay. It takes a certain player to stay, to be a Blue and to stay a Blue. And when you get here and it's so easy to raise a family, people take care of you and everything, but you also have an alumni room that is nicer than any locker room I ever dressed in. We have a sauna, a hot tub, a steam room. We have a lounge. We have massage chairs. We're in the midst of putting in a hyperbaric chamber, an infrared sauna, and a golf simulator. We've got a lounge that you come in. It was nothing to go into. You could go in there 4 days a week and see Jimmy Roberts and Bobby Plager in the hot tub smoking cigars in the morning at 8 a.m. But they just want to get out of the house. And so it was, you know, the guys skate 3 times a week. Some participate all the time and some couple times a year. Scott Mellenby went out. He's going out this afternoon because his son Nick is living here now again, working for Boeing. And he's been skating and he wants to skate with his son. And so those relationships that are built and are one of the reasons, but the fact that we have each other to count on, it's so nice. It's just know that even though you don't have a team to play on, because when you leave the game, you don't miss the game. You miss the guys. Mm-hmm. You miss the game in the playoffs, but you don't miss the game. You miss the guys. And when you got the guys, it's so great. You can do so many things that are so fun. And knowing that you still have each other's backs, pretty cool.
Think Kirill Kaprizov would miss the money?
Well, I thought Billy's answer when they said, "Are you excited?" was awesome. He better fucking be excited.
Hey, by the way, I just before we let you go, you know, part of the latest CBA is something you've been fighting for a long period of time. And that is medical assistance and for the alumni. you know, yeah. and both the PA and the league have come through for it. Now, finally,
yeah.
you must yeah. be thrilled.
I'm so excited. And again, like when we started this transition of changing over the alumni, and I certainly am not going to knock the former players because they tried. They just didn't really know how to take the next step. So when we sort of made the transition and I was able to get a quorum of guys and then get on the board and be the chairman, when I was able, Wayne McBean, myself, and Paul Cavallini hired Heels, okay? And Heels has done such an exceptional job for us. It's awesome, you know? And you know, Heels, he wants to fight with everyone. He'd rather fight with everyone than, you know, it's like, okay, you know, you just got to calm down a little bit here.
He thinks he's Mel Gibson in Braveheart. You know that, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Well, here, yeah. Well, here's the problem. When Chase is the voice of reason, it's the way to go, okay? So I basically have said to Heels a couple times, you know, and now, you know, Gravy took my place in there and is in there, but the league and the Players Association didn't trust each other so bad that we couldn't get anything done. And we just started doing it on our own. Here's what happens in any business or any place. When you have capital, so we went from, I'm sharing stuff that I think the world needs to know. But when we went from $17,000 in our bank account to $4.5 million, now you're getting the attention of people. Now we can start to really help people.
Yep.
We can put 120 guys in facilities, whether it's mental health, substance abuse, you know, whatever it is, and their families, right? Dental help, you know, getting medical doctors that are doing surgeries for free on our guys. That's the stuff we did behind the curtain. So what pisses me off is when I see this Westhead write an article about how we didn't help Murph. He was so far behind on that shit that he wrote about Murph that it wasn't even funny. Like, yeah, he was sleeping in a tarp when we got him under at a football stadium. And you know, no one does a follow-up with him. Like, when you can't get a guy to get – when he doesn't want to help, you can't help him. Doesn't matter. Now, we tried 3 times, right? But there's no follow-up. And so when all these things are written that disparage the players or the team, whether you agree with the mistakes guys made, because we've all made them and held – Lord knows if they dug up my skeletons, I'd never be able to be on the air, nor would you, nor would Darren. Like, we all have those swords to bear. But do a little follow-up. Like, figure out that, hey, these guys have done a shitload for a lot of people, you know? And yet there's no follow-up, you know? Same thing. And I know this is controversial, and you're going to go, oh, did you open that can of worms? But, like, what's the follow-up with the foundation that Kyle Beach was doing? Do you know the follow-up? No. I don't know if he has a foundation. I heard that half of the money that was paid to him was going to be to start this foundation. I hope he's helping people. I don't know if he is. I hope he's okay from the help that he got, but there's no follow-up. But you know, we're there, our alumni, to help whoever, whether it be him, you know, Joe Murphy, whoever it is, if that has a setback, right? And we're there to help. And I don't think Glenn and our board gets enough credit for what they've done to help guys. That's my point.
Mm. Yeah, I think the quiet assistance that group has given so many former players, and they don't. And quite frankly, Kelly, you know this. They don't necessarily want the attention. They don't want to embarrass the guy.
John, listen to me. If we got 220 guys getting help right now, we have 440 that won't ask for it.
Right. That's right.
Right. Because they don't want to be, they're embarrassed.
Yeah.
Right? And this is how it starts. I'll tell you how it starts. It starts with you get done and you've had an itinerary your entire life since you were 16. When to get on the bus, when to eat, when to go to school, when to get this done. It was regimented, right? From 16 to, let's just say, 32. For 16, now 32, you're the last person to know you can't play anymore. Mm-hmm. Right. So you figure, oh, my God, what am I going to do? Right. But my hip's bugging me a little bit. Oh, this insurance in the States is $2,700 a month. I could go to Canada and get free health insurance. Worst insurance in the world, Canada. Great when you got the sniffles. Horse shit when you need a surgery. Get on a list, sit on a list for 4 years. By then, you can't even walk. And here's what happens. Now, I'm 32. Now, I'm 33, 34. Now, it's time for me to get on the list, and I get bumped 3 months. Okay. I can't get pain pills anymore because I don't have a trainer. And so I'm self-medicating with booze. Now, let me see. Some guy says, hey, listen, I got one of these Oxy. Try these. This will help knock the pain off. So now you're drinking, and now you're self-prescribing. Now you're buying the shit. That's how the fentanyl overdoses have happened, and that's how guys get addicted to pain pills. They're self-medicating because they can't get it. Like, they're not handing them out in Canada. They're not handing them out down here. It's really regulated now. And when you can't get them, the alternative is to find somewhere where you can. And then they buy them on the street, and it's going on around us, and there's certain guys you can help. We've got three guys we know that need help right now, and their wives are begging us to do something, and we can't do anything because one of them keeps dodging us. The other two don't. They're fine. They're telling us they're fine, but they continually have the same car wrecks, you know? So we sign NDAs and we want to keep it private, you wish you could help everybody, but they got to want it.
Right.
And that's the difference. And we're trying to get to everybody. And like you said, the league and the Players Association, give them credit. They settled on a number with us, and we're able to go out and get this insurance, albeit it's more of a wraparound policy, but it's help.
It's light years from where it was when you guys started. Light years.
No question. No question.
So you start the podcast on Saturday? I got to know.
Yeah, Ice Guardians Pod.
Okay.
Ice Guardians Pod. And you know what's great is our first guest is Adam Scorgi, who was the producer of Ice Guardians, the movie that I helped produce with him, the documentary.
Yes.
He's going to be our first guest. And then we'll have...
Are you sure he's going to get any words in with Hollier? Seriously.
I don't know. Well, there'll be some interesting questions asked. I can tell you.
Tune in. So it'll be totally clean, no profanity, and no laughing. Like it'll be that, right?
PG. It'll be boring as hell.
Yeah, it'll be boring as hell. I can tell you that. No, it'll be fun. Just you know, Holly's got some great story, and if you want to talk about a smart guy, another brilliant guy. You're not going to win a war of words with him. He's gonna win that battle. He doesn't bring a sword to that fight. He brings a can.
I can't wait for this project for you, man.
Thanks, bud.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah, I think so. It's good. I'm grateful that I get to do it with him. And we've always been, him and I have been best friends. And I mean, I roomed with him. I tell him all the time, I didn't room with you. I roomed with your suitcase.
hey, listen, save the good stuff for Saturday, okay? Save the good stuff.
All right.
Jay, sir, be well, okay, man? Hey, we're sending you everything.
Thanks for thinking of me.
Kelly gave us a little tour there. If we could publish that, find a way to publish that, that'd be great. But he's got a cool setup there that he's got going with podcasts with Brett and then some Manning versus Manning type presentations.
I'll tell you what. I think I know Brett well enough. If Brett can stay with it, it's going to be magic. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take a guy like Kelly Chase to keep Brett with it. Could you imagine being, you know, in the days of having a roommate on the road? Can you imagine Kelly Chase and Brett Hull sharing a room? Seriously.
Yeah, that's pure gold for content. Without you even knowing it's content.
That is a movie. Yeah. Are you kidding me? That is a movie.
I feel like there's going to be some great reaction to this.
I hope so. We'll have to get Brett on.
Nail him down. Game time's at 7, Brett. wishing
we get him to tell some Hitchcock stories. The Hitchcock stories would be good. Oh, yeah.
Anything. Lining up a face-off, saying, can you believe who they've got me playing with?
That's right.
The guy's right beside him. Enjoy. We got a couple more days as we get down to a lot of waiver wire action. We'll see what happens there around the National Hockey League and see if the other guys that are able to sign follow suit.
And you think it's going to be quick, and I don't.
We'll see what happens by the next time we talk on 100% Hockey with Martin Shannon.